the first Jackson 5 clip would probably cost them anywhere from $50,000 to $70,000 for the video and for the audio licensing. And that's, I'm sure for them, a jaw-dropping moment. And that was just the first clip in it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Documentary First. Today, we're talking about the one thing that can absolutely bankrupt your film before you even finish it, licensing. Veteran ARC producer Teddy Cannon is here to explain why your favorite clip might cost you $70,000. More importantly, how you could protect your budget by bringing in an expert upstream instead of waiting until it's too late. If you want to avoid the messy middle of production, this episode's for you. Today, I am sitting down with veteran media producer overseeing legal rights and clearances and a tech software entrepreneur, Teddy Cannon. Welcome to the show, Teddy.
How you doing?
I am awesome. I'm really happy to be here with you today. Today, we are going to be talking about ARC producing. Why don't you tell us what that is?
So ARC is an archival and a clearance producer. In today's production line, we don't have normally just an archival producer and then a clearance producer. They've kind of melded the two together. You are an archival producer, but you're also expected to clear as well. So I call that an ARC producer.
How did you get into this type of work? It is very specific. Also, people don't really understand how important it is. And people usually leave it till the end. And I say people, people like me, because I did that. It was not a wise decision. And I'm here hoping to keep people from making the same mistakes I did, which is why I have you on today to teach us why that is a bad idea. Tell us how you got involved in this work and what exactly it all means.
I did a lot of years doing the segment producing for my world's scariest. And we were expected to pull all of the materials together to tell the full story arc. I didn't actually work in the clearance department until I learned what it was and how important it was. I really, really have just absorbed what it is we do in the link in the production. You're just like standing in the middle between production and legal and then all of the vendors. And it's a really interesting place to be. And I really loved being there. And I've been doing that for 10 years now. And yeah, that's what I'm doing. So clearance is the department that handles all of your third-party assets. A third-party asset is anything that is not owned by the production, i.e. that they went out and shot, which would be interviews and B-roll and anything that they created, which would be personal assets like people's photos and documents, videos, and those videos can be brought in that are not owned by the production. That could be personal videos or it could be newscast type stuff. It could be stock footage, which would be videos and stills and audio. And then we have to make sure that everything is cleared to use in the production, ideally before it goes on the palette of the editor. So the editor can freely use what's on their palette in the, what they're cutting.
Why wouldn't it be free to use? Why can't I just use it if I want?
Because it's owned by somebody. If you go and you shoot an event in your neighborhood and you post it up to YouTube and then a production wants to use it, they have to get your permission to use it. They actually have to get a document. Otherwise, what will happen is if they put something in their production and is broadcast, but they didn't clear it, the people that actually own that asset can come back and say, you did not ask me if you could use that. You didn't pay me. I want. And then usually they come back with a ridiculous sum of money because they think Hollywood has got money coming out of their ears. And that is a devastating thing for a producer to hear.
And it presents a lot of risk. I remember I was in France and I had taken a picture of this beautiful statue. And I thought, I can use this in my film. Well, that's not necessarily so. I didn't know that. But why wouldn't that be as simple as that, Teddy?
Okay, so you're touching on something that is actually a frequent problem. What you're talking about is a work of art and it's owned by somebody. And if you're putting it in your film, then you have to clear a work of art. Taking a photo of a beautiful statue that's in an environment and then putting it in your production is something that you might have to clear. But also, I'll tell you what's really, really frequent that happens is that, and this is why I would say it's important to have your clearance person in the pre-production meeting. The crew will go out, and of course the crew is absolutely professional and they know what they're doing, but it doesn't hurt to have your clearance person in the meeting that can just speak up and say, please be aware of your frame. If there's any artwork behind the person, or any photos or any, you know, anything that needs to be cleared, we're going to have to do that. So either you need to, in the field, be very vigilant on how you're framing your interview, or you need to send a screen grab of the frame to me and I can review it for you and tell you you're clear, or that is a piece of art and you're going to have to clear it. And so that's one of the things that we run into further downstream when they're in post, long after they've been and shot at an Airbnb and who knows where, and trying to find out what that piece of artwork was on the wall by getting the person who manages the property to go over to the property and look at the back of the painting to see if they can get a name is not an easy situation. You're never working within our time limits. And that you, when you're that downstream, it's a very, you're like, I need you to do it right now. And it's like, they'll do it in a week or two.
And it's never cheap and it's never within budget, which is why that's the whole point of this podcast, is that we want people to understand the importance of starting with an art producer at the very beginning and scheduling them in the budget before you ever begin production. Now, we have a wonderful example of why this is the case. So you had a case study, I think, that you want to share with us.
I have a couple of case studies. The first one is one that's actually happening right now. And it is a group that has put together a learning video series. And there are about 9 episodes to it. And it's based around music. And they already cut it. It's already locked. It's already everything. And they came to me and said, can you clear this for us? So in their first episode, they are using 30 seconds of the Jackson 5. And there's another artist, very, very famous artist that they are using. And that's not to mention that all the way through the series, they bring up album covers and they bring up all kinds of things while they're talking about how to make the music. I don't know what they're going to do now. They're in trouble because I sort of sketched out from the first thing, the Jackson 5 clip. If your audience doesn't know, the Jackson family is hyper protective of their brand. Highly unlikely that, and this is performance video and music. So the music runs with the performance on video and then they cut. And the music still plays. So there's multi-layers of licensing there. And music is very difficult to fair use. And your project has to be specific to being able to fair use. This is a for-profit learning series, and they would not be able to fair use. The first Jackson 5 clip, I sketched out that it would probably cost them anywhere from $50,000 to $70,000 for the video and for the audio licensing. I mean, I'm sure for them, it was a jaw-dropping moment. And that was just the first clip in it. And this is the type of situation where they just didn't think that they needed anybody. They're just going to put it together and then they'll get it later. We'll clear it later. That is a recipe for disaster. You are taking great risk. And once you're already locked in, everything's done, and you're literally an editor and a producer, you're in trouble and no money.
Did that amount include the art producer and the lawyer?
No, just to clear it. They wanted me to go through the whole series. And I was like, you have to hire me if you want me to go through a whole series, but I'll give you the first clip. And it was pretty, it wasn't that hard to come up with how much it would cost to license Jackson 5.
We're going to get to what it costs to hire an art producer later. I need you to go back because some of our audience may not understand a term that you used called fair use.
Fair use is a doctrine that allows documentarians to use copyrighted material if it serves a purpose. If you're a documentary, then you squarely fall in the category that can fair use, and you should fair use. And so not only should you work with an ARC producer who's familiar with fair use, because they can tell you while you're trying to put this together, that's not going to be cleared for fair use by an attorney. So you want that. And then you absolutely have to have the attorney, because for your E&O insurance, you can only get the E&O insurance if you have a letter from the attorney that says, I've looked at the cut, it's clear, and oh, by the way, here is all the stuff that I say you can fair use. So that's why you have to have an attorney. So an art producer and a fair use attorney working on this. Like I said, if you're a documentarian and you're speaking to, usually the rule of fair use is if you're talking about a duck and there's a duck on screen, it falls fair use. So either your talking head or your VO needs to be speaking to what we're seeing on screen for it to actually fall within the boundaries of fair use.
So can you give me an example of a...
So I'll use news footage. So news footage is expensive, but it's not ridiculously expensive. But for documentarians, sometimes even that expense is something that if you don't have to pay for it and it fits within fair use, then you should use it. So the perpetrator took off and hit the freeway and was on their way to wherever. And then you cut to news footage of that either happening or them talking about that happening. And that would fall into fair use.
Today's episode is brought to you by our friends over at Virgil Films. With over 25 years of distribution experience, Virgil has released such hits as Super Size Me and the Oscar-nominated Restrepo, along with a trove of indie treasures like Forks Over Knives, To Die For, 7 Yards, and Speed is Expensive. Now, you can find all of those films, along with the entire Virgil catalog, on any transactional platform out there, like Amazon, Apple TV, YouTube, Tubi, and the rest. Are you a filmmaker and you're having trouble with distribution? Talk to Virgil. They work with every major platform directly, and they offer a variety of deals that fit with every filmmaker's needs, from standard distribution to service deals. They do it all. And they don't just distribute films. They elevate them. Truthfully, they're just really good people to work with. So if you want to learn more, head on over to virgilfilms.com and tell them Christian Taylor sent you. And now, on with the show. How much does an ARC producer cost? Question one. Question two, how do you begin your relationship with an ARC producer?
So depends on the project. We have very veteran ARC producers that ask for $3,500 a week. And that would include veterans that just want to work, $2,500 a week. And then junior people come in for cheaper than that. But you really want to have somebody senior on who can tell you immediately about something like the Jackson 5. Oh, we're going to use Jackson 5 here. No, you want to pay for it? It's going to be expensive. They can tell you right off the bat that being able to turn that around very quickly in the moment, instead of like finding out 3 or 4 or 5 days later or 2 weeks later when the attorney said, Jackson 5 is... So you want somebody who's senior. Plus they have like really, really great relationships.
Explain how that makes a difference.
It makes a difference, I guess, for the producer in that if the budget is very low and those relationships know and respect each other to be able to have a frank conversation on what the project wants to use and how much money they have to use it. If you've had a long-standing relationship with these outlets, it definitely, I believe, helps.
So talk to me about how somebody hires an ARC producer, what that looks like. How do you get a quote?
You can post jobs on Staff Me Up. There's the Archival Producers Association, the APA, and that's where you're getting really good archival. Again, they're called archival, but all of the people that I work with are veteran clearance people as well. So you reach out and basically you start to have a conversation with the person. And in that conversation, you know pretty clearly, can the person do the job? There's also like the connecting of the people. Because you're working in a really fast-paced, high-stress situation, I call them dance partners, and you want to make sure that you can dance with this person, that they're going to dance with you, and that just is a feeling you get. You will get that from your archival producer. You will go, this is the person. Not only are they knowledgeable, but I feel like they are connecting with me, and then they quote you their rate, their weekly rate, and then hire them.
In some ways, it seems like they act as a point guard. You're the coach of your project. They're acting as a point guard with the lawyers, with the different places who own the assets. And that can be music, photos, videos, paintings. That can be numbers of things.
So let me just add one thing to what you're saying, what we're also really, really skilled at. When I said earlier on that we put the paint on the palette of the editor, so we know how to find what you're looking for. It's like you've hired somebody to go pick berries for you. You tell them what kind of berry you want, and they're like, oh, I know where to get that berry. And so they know how to navigate into the brush and find the berries that you need. And then if the berries aren't there, they have been working so long at this that they can sort of like, okay, I'll give you one project I work on, which was a murder that happened in Redding, California in the 1970s, and they needed to set the tone of the area, and they just weren't finding it on any of the standard stock places. And so I started reaching out to like very small museums in the area, and sometimes they didn't even have stuff digitized, but they were willing to let somebody come in and digitize what they had so that they can have material to put in their project that would set the tone for Redding, California in 1972. That is why you want to hire somebody who is a veteran, because they know where to go. And if it's not apparent, then they are really good at figuring out where to get it. Like, that's my advice on that.
I think your whole point of hiring a veteran art producer is fantastic, because you're right. If the berry isn't there, you're thinking creatively about how to solve a problem.
And we've done it 1,000 times before.
And I think it's got to be a source of pride, maybe. I was wondering, can you think about any projects that stand out for you like that, that you're like, oh my gosh, I'm super proud?
The Kiss the Future project, which was on the Oscar list, but then it didn't get chosen. But amazing documentary that is about U2 and their involvement in stopping the siege on Sarajevo. There was just this archival footage used in it that literally makes the piece. Like, so you have CNN. So back then there were really only a handful of outlets. I mean, that footage has been used over and over and over again. And so if you're making a documentary and you keep using the same footage, it's not super enticing for the audience. But that stuff that you can find that they've never seen before is the stuff that really impacts. And so that one was filled with that. I'll tell you one that I wasn't a part of that I'm very proud of my community at how important we are to the link in the production line. It's starting to get noticed. We have been sort of delegated as like the lowest end of the production and get very little respect. Traditionally, these people who can give you, like I said, the paint on your palette to make something that is really incredible. There's a movie out called Yacht Rock, which is all about the genre of music that is called yacht rock, that is literally littered end to end with archival. And I can't remember the name of the archival producer that worked on that movie, but he got third billing, which was great. I felt really great that they understood how important this person was so much that they put him as third bill on the project.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I mean, what we do is amazing. Like, we can literally, like, if you get somebody good, they can give you something that literally changes your project, that, you know, may create the most incredible turn in the story that you needed. And that's what we do.
It's so true. With this World War II project, you know, that I did, everybody's seen so much World War II footage and the photos, and they just keep recycling them. And that was my mission. What can I find that people have not seen before? And I had to go in and find the images myself. And, you know, it just took forever. But when you find somebody that's already done that work, they are worth the money, worth their weight in gold. I think documentaries are expanding. They are taking off. As is the media that regular people are producing that other people want to use in many different ways, whether it's you know? And so then you do have to license those. And now people are media savvy enough to know, no, I'm not going to just let you use that. I want to be paid for that. I think there's a growing demand for people in your field. It's just that now people need to realize they need to be added at the beginning and not at the end.
That's it, sister.
Yeah. All right. So then now let's go back and talk about this product that you are working on that's going to revolutionize our little industry here.
So a company is called 3P Sync, and we're developing a system that's called ArcWorks. What it does is it handles third-party assets all the way through the process of bringing them into the system to deliverables. And it really comes down to the whole rest of the production line is digital, and then you have our link in the production line, and we still work on spreadsheets. And it's crazy that we work on spreadsheets. It takes a very, very long time. You know, if somebody sends you over 100 assets to bring into the system, you have to do it manually. And it just doesn't need to be that way anywhere, because we live in a digital world and we're talking about digital items. And so my system has the ability to extract all the information from the digital asset, name it, put it into your system. And then once the EDL comes in, it immediately rectifies and tells you exactly what's in it. And then the next phase of it will have deliverables and will have a fair use rating on it. It won't be able to tell you, you know, for sure that you can fair use this, but it'll give you a rating on it. And a document signing area. So one of the issues we have is that we deal with a lot of documents that have to get signed. And right now you have a PDF and it goes out to so-and-so, or you send a DocuSign to somebody and it takes forever to get that back. And we can be basically managing, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 documents out at a time. And so my drive is to have everything central. And so you would have in the system tab for your signing area, your document area, you would upload your document into it and then invite all parties to come and review it and put their red lines in it. And hopefully within a day, you've got a document that's locked. And once it's locked, you can sign it. And then everyone gets a copy, and the executed copy is archived in the system. So that's what we're working on.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. I can't wait for that to come to fruition. Our industry needs it. I'm ready for it. I want to use it for my next project. Can't wait for it. Well, I really appreciate your time. This has been enlightening. What else do you have to say before we go?
I'm open to consult with anybody who is got questions. My email is teddycannon@gmail.com. That's teddycannon@gmail.com. Happy to consult. I work with an attorney. If you're just getting started on your project, I'm absolutely happy to give you some pointers on how to go forward with it and even get some like preliminary attorney response on, you know, the content that you're trying to tell a story about and how to handle it. So I would just say again, like I've been hammering over and over again, bring us on at the top. Bring us on at the top.
Yep, that's it. Absolutely. Well, I would highly recommend reaching out to Teddy. He is one of the good guys. And so he comes highly recommended. And I just think it is good money to start from the beginning with an archival producer. So just word to the wise. So before we go, we got to do our DocuView Deja Vu, everybody's favorite segment. But you've already given us two movies.
Yeah.
Yacht Rock. And then the other one was
Kiss the Future.
Kiss the Future. Those are the two. Yacht Rock and Kiss the Future.
Kiss the Future is on Paramount Plus. Yacht Rock, I don't remember what that's on.
Okay, well, we'll find it.
But just thank you, Christian, for all of us that have to like more than 50% of the time clean up a mess, for helping get the word out there so that that doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, my pleasure. I think you guys are heroes. I think you deserve a lot of recognition. It's hard work. It's hard work in the background and nobody notices it. It's sort of like, you know, editors are finally now getting credit as writers. And I cheer that, because I do think editors in documentary film do help write the story. And I feel the same is true about art producers.
Yeah.
You guys are part of writing this story, especially in a documentary. And I recognize that the hard way by just messing it up like I do so many other things. So anyway, my pleasure.
Hey, if this conversation was useful, the single best thing you can do is just text it to one person.
somebody making a documentary, somebody about to make the same clearance mistakes I made, or somebody who just appreciates a smart conversation about how the work gets done. One share, that's the ask. And if you're new here, hit follow on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you're listening. Also, a quick written review on Apple Podcasts goes a lot further than you think. And if you want to go deeper with us, join us on Patreon. All the info's in the show notes. All right, everybody, thank you so much for listening to Documentary First, where we believe everybody has a story to tell, and you can be the one to tell it. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Documentary First. We really appreciate your partnership with us. We can't do any of this without you. So thank you for listening, donating, and following along on our journey. We are supported by generous donations from people just like you. To make a donation, visit thegirlwhowarefreedom.com or support us on Patreon at patreon.com/documentaryfirst. To learn more about our other works in progress, visit documentaryfirst.com or follow Documentary First on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. This podcast was produced by Documentary First, edited and mixed by Jason Hoban, with music by Jeff Kurtenacker.